When exactly is the best time in a child's life to start the study of music?
If you can talk to a mother before she has her first child, that is the absolutely best time to talk to them about the kind of environment that they would like to create for their child, what their dreams and hopes are for their children. And then when they hear me say things like, the kind of environment that we're considering is one that's filled with beautiful music. In my own traditional study, the listening to the music, you know, you didn't do that. I studied with the nuns, who were very strict. If you wanted to play something you had heard, what they called playing by ear, they would crack your knuckles for it. You know, you didn't do that. You read the score.
Dorothy Jones is the Suzuki Early Childhood Education Committee Chair for the International Suzuki Association. How did she heal her bruised knuckles and move from a score-based, listening-scarce music experience to advocating that parents begin filling their child's environment with music even before they are born? You're listening to Building Noble Hearts, a production of the Suzuki Association of the Americas. I'm Margaret Watts Romney. Here, we take a look at the learning environments in which children, parents, and teachers gain new knowledge and how they're encouraged to become fine individuals. Throughout this series, we speak with members of the Suzuki music community inspired by humanitarian violinist Shinichi Suzuki, and we're finding themes of good teaching everywhere, like listening, community, and creativity. Dorothy Jones's path to expertise in Suzuki early childhood education could be seen as a series of coincidences. It started from a trip her husband and daughter took to the music store that ended in tears.
When our eldest daughter, Beth, was 4 years old, Dawn was an instrumental music teacher. I was teaching music in the schools, and she desperately wanted to play the violin. We don't know why the violin exactly, because neither of us played the violin. But he was in the music store one morning having instruments repaired for his band. He took Beth with him, and there was a small violin hanging on the wall. And she stood there and stared at it and stared at it. And when he was ready to go home, couldn't find her, she was sitting in the corner crying because she wanted that violin. So the owner of the store said to Dawn, oh, you'll be back next week. Take it home for a week and let her hold it, and by next week she'll have forgotten about it. You can bring it back. That didn't happen. We started a search for a teacher. I finally convinced one of our friends that he should start her, and he said, I've never taught a four-year-old child in my life. But he said, I just happened to be reading a book about a man named Shinichi Suzuki. Have you ever heard of him? And coincidentally, about a month before that, we had seen on the television a program that came from Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada. And there were two teachers who had been brought to Edmonton to start a Suzuki program, and they had both worked with Shinichi Suzuki in Japan.
After some months of lessons, their violinist friend recommended they move on to someone who had more familiarity with Shinichi Suzuki's teaching methods. Teachers who had training in Suzuki's ideas were rare at this time in the United States and Canada, so they felt very lucky when they learned of an experienced violin teacher who had been hired to start a Suzuki preparatory program near them in London, Ontario.
Beth's very first lesson with Mr. Dillmore happened the day after he arrived in London. By this time, she was about 5 and a half. Sharon was with us. She was 3, and she was sitting there watching big-eyed. And after Beth's lesson, Mr. Dillmore said, and where's your violin? And I burst out with, well, she's a bit young. She's only 3. He said, young? Dr. Suzuki would say she's 3 years too late. So on the way home, we got a violin for Sharon, and progress from that day forward just was amazing.
Dorothy created an environment for her children where they were immersed in listening to and playing music. She was teaching Suzuki piano as well, so her career path was aiming more and more towards the ideas of this man, Shinichi Suzuki. She had her first chance to meet him when she attended the first International Conference of Suzuki Teachers.
First time I met him was at the first international in Hawaii. I think that was 1975. And I was amazed at how small he was. I'm at least a foot taller than he was. His energy was incredible. And one of the impacts that he made that time was he stood up in front of probably 1,000 people, and as part of his speech, he said, "I truly believe that music education should begin 9 months before the birth of the child." And you can imagine that there was a lot of intake of breath at that. But I didn't forget it. 2 years later, same conference in Hawaii again, he said, 2 years ago I made the statement that I believe music education should begin 9 months before birth. I was wrong. Now I believe it should begin 9 months before the birth of the mother. And he laughed. You know, his humor struck me as an incredible part of the man. But it wasn't until we went and lived there in 1985 that I really got to see him on a daily basis and realize all of the other wonderful strengths he had, his sensitivity.
Dorothy spent several months in Japan in 1985 to further develop her own piano teaching approach and for her teenage son to study violin with Dr. Suzuki. She ended up taking away from the experience much more than she had imagined.
If I hadn't taken David, if I had just gone myself, I would have watched piano lessons whenever possible, and the rest of the time I would have practiced myself. And it would have been a totally different environment that I had. Watching all of these lessons day after day after day, hour after hour, I began to realize that you can train yourself to hear. And I'm not a violinist, but as I watched that group working on vibrato and becoming more relaxed and using the bow arm, I realized that you can train yourself to hear incredible differences in tone. I began to realize that his ability to observe, to listen intently, were all part of what it takes to become a really good Suzuki teacher, and that these were skills each of us needed to develop in ourselves. And often he would bring in a tape that he had listened to from 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, that day, and he'd say, "Here is a 4-year-old girl playing a 16th size violin. And she played it beautifully, good tone, very accurate." And he'd say, "I hear the skill of the teacher when I listen to these tapes." And he said to all of the teachers sitting in front of him, or teachers-to-be, "Later, when your children, your students send tapes, I will understand your ability as teachers." So those kinds of statements really started you thinking about, what kind of a teacher am I? Am I that thorough? Do I listen that carefully? Am I training my students to listen like that?
Dorothy was inspired by the deep level of focus and observation Dr. Suzuki practiced with the students and teachers around him. She wanted to develop that level of skill in herself as well as in her students. Dorothy's daughter, Sharon, now a Suzuki Childhood Education teacher trainer, remembers her mother's trip.
In, I guess it was 1985, when my mother went to Japan with my brother, David, she spent 4 months observing Dr. Suzuki and Miss Mori and Dr. Kadoka as well.
Sharon said the observant teachers in Japan saw potential in Dorothy and encouraged her to keep going on her path of immersing babies and young children in music.
Dr. Suzuki, you know, who I always believe was a very keen observer of all human nature, certainly figured out that Mom was somebody he needed to be speaking to, and he talked to her about babies, and she took it home as a real mission.
Wait, babies? Really? Like weeks or months old in a structured classroom, expecting them to participate? Well, why not? Studies have shown that babies are already learning patterns of language and music before they're born. Kate Einerson completed her PhD at the McMaster Institute, studying the development of musical knowledge in infants and children. At the 2016 Suzuki Conference, she discussed how many of these studies support Dr. Suzuki's intuition.
Music learning begins, as we say, even before age zero. Children are learning about music in utero. And in fact, infants and children, newborns, recognize and remember all kinds of experiences from prior to when they were born. So this includes voices. They'll recognize their mother's voice as newborns. They'll recognize their native language, so they can recognize the speech and the contour of, say, English, if they have an English-speaking mother, and they can distinguish that from other languages that aren't English. They can recognize particular stories. If you're a mother and you read stories to your unborn child every night in the last trimester, they'll recognize the rhythms of that story when they're born, and even songs. So if you sing a song or play a song, if you're a musician, or just listen to a song, they'll recognize that as well. And I should just take a moment to say that there are research studies specific to all of these,
which we have in our show notes on our website. Dr. Suzuki, Dorothy, and parents around the world know instinctively that babies are picking up the words we say to them and the music they hear. It's why we see adults impulsively cooing and babbling to babies, even though the conversation isn't reciprocated. Dorothy, now back from Japan, went far beyond babbling to babies. She had the initiative to set up a curriculum and classes for children ages 0 to 3. What did Dorothy understand about young children, and how did she apply it to babies? What are these classes like? She explained some of the principles to a classroom of adults and children.
We know as educators that experiences precede words. So for an infant, they have to have many experiences before they can say the word. Words never precede the experience. In fact, experiences must precede any learning that takes place. We know that experience provides the foundation for the natural development of your child's learning and the listening skills, the observation skills, the acquisition of language, all of those things that are so important to all future learning.
One way teachers create those important experiences is with a ball rolling game. The teachers, parents, and children all sit in a circle and roll the ball from one person to the other and sing. This gives children experiences with music, socializing, paying attention, and waiting their turn.
Many times I've seen with an older child sitting next to a younger child, the ball will roll through between them, and the older child will actually take the ball and give it to the younger child.
Although the activities are full of energy in our classroom, we always maintain a calm environment. The children are focused and engaged in the activity and not wandering.
That was Lynn McCall and Laura Spino, Suzuki Early Childhood Education Teachers, or SECE. But it's not just teachers who see the advantages gained with these simple exercises, because it's not just the students who are in the class.
Repetition has helped my son tremendously, and it's also helped me. What I learned from the SECE class is the importance of structure and of repeating the same thing continually, day after day after day. And I've taken these principles that I've learned in class and brought them into our life at home. His bedtime routine is exactly the same, from bathing to bedtime stories, and his bedtime is the same every night. I structure his day and model it after what I've learned in the SECE program. As a result, I have no problems with bedtimes, no problems with meals. He's a very happy child, and I'm therefore a very happy parent.
That may be just one parent's opinion, but there are many others like it. Since the parent is in the classroom, they see these effects the classes have on their children.
Because of the repetition in the class, they know exactly what's going to come up next, so they become very confident in the class. I know my daughter, because she was so confident in the class, because of the structure, she loved to come to this class. Repetition builds confidence in all aspects of life.
Repetition. And as teacher Lynn McCall reminds us, you're never too young to benefit from it.
One of the children in our class, Michael, started with us when he was only 3 months old. And we have a listening activity which occurs at the beginning of every class. We walk to the beat of the lollipop drum. And when we hear the drum stop, we stop. The drum starts, we walk. Although Michael was not walking and was being held during the activity, he could feel the beat and the starting and the stopping of the drum. By the time he was 6 months old, still being held during the activity, when the drum started, he would kick his feet, and when the drum stopped, he would freeze, along with the rest of his motoring friends. Amazing, the neural pathways were there.
Infancy is such a short time, but as Dorothy Jones began learning way back at the very first Suzuki conference in 1975, the long-term benefits of these experiences can be enormous.
What I have seen over and over again in our baby toddler classes is that the parent learns how to cultivate that talent by having fun with the child with the music and realizing that the more repetitions they have, the deeper the understanding and the stronger the ability development.
What we now know is that the mother or the father, whichever one comes to the class with the child, can be taught how to become a really good observer of their own child and to start appreciating how the other children in the group learn too, so that we develop a community within each of the baby classes where they aren't comparing, there's no jealousy, they celebrate each other's child's development. So the first time a child can strike the triangle right at the precise moment in Hickory Dickory Dock, everybody claps. Nobody has to tell them to do that. They're just all so excited to see it happening.
Parents appreciate this environment and the support from teachers to understand their child in new ways.
I think the teachers in this class have been very skillful and they've been a big source of encouragement. They've really helped point out the skills that I didn't know that my child had. And not every day is a good day for every child. So even when we come to class on a bad day, you know, the teachers encourage us and point out to us saying that, you know, your child can do this, and which we don't realize, and it really helps.
So in other words, the whole process of Suzuki early childhood education is really for both parent and child. Dr. Suzuki encouraged Dorothy to focus on younger and younger children, to develop a program to nurture the minds of babies during this early time when they're so open to language and music. Dorothy also saw there is a tremendous opportunity for establishing a calm environment where parent and child can both practice appreciative observation. This is the key: observation. Children constantly observe their parents to learn what to do next and how to navigate the world. In the classes established by Dorothy, the parent also observes the child and learns their strengths, their preferences, and their personality. The teacher observes everyone, giving feedback, then they all celebrate each step of growth.
The kind of environment that we're considering in a Suzuki environment is one that's filled with beautiful music and one where the parent learns to observe the child so carefully that they can celebrate all the small steps, all the wonderful things that happen. When parents hear that, they get really excited because it doesn't feel to them as if it's impossible for them to do. In fact, it's something they would love to be able to do. What it does is it changes their whole perception of what parenting means and what they can do and how they can be involved. You know, they don't want to miss these opportunities for observation.
If you don't have any babies in your life right now, the next time you're at the park or the grocery store or walking past a daycare, take a moment to observe. Observe the babies. Imagine the untold numbers of neural pathways being developed. Observe the infant interacting with their environment, and then visualize what would happen if all children were immersed in calm and encouraging environments, which develop their social, linguistic, motor, and musical skills. not only what remarkable children they would be, but what remarkable adults would be surrounding them as we learn to observe and celebrate each accomplishment. Our theme music, Sunup, is composed by Stephen Katz and Derek Snyder and performed by the Snyder Cello Army. Piano Sonata No. 12 in F Major by Mozart was performed by Pavali Jumpanen. Prelude in G Major No. 5 by Rachmaninoff was played by Grant Moffat. Sonata No. 3 in C Major by J.S. Bach was played by Katie Lansdale. Twinkle Twinkle Little Star was played by Della Gardner. And Methuselah Podcast Productions gives masterful support to our scripts and production. Want to attend a Suzuki Early Childhood Education course or learn more about Suzuki teaching? Check out the Events tab at suzukiassociation.org. If you like what you heard today, give us a rating and review on iTunes so more people can find us. It truly helps. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.